Hi, everyone. I'm Mark LaPointe, and this is part two of my interview with Brian Hausman, who's the author of Tech Savvy Parenting, Navigating Your Child's Digital Life. So the whole point of this two-part series is really to give parents some advice and some guidance on how to engage their kids in their digital world, you know, help to understand why they're so engaged in things like texting and social media, but also to help our kids to become responsible and safe when they're doing these things. So part two today, we're going to focus on a few things. First, we're going to talk about how we can help our kids to protect their online reputation. You know, to explain what does that mean, their online reputation, and why is that so important. And then we're going to get into cyberbullying, which is a huge issue these days. And we're going to define what it is, why it's important, and why we should be communicating to our kids about it. And finally, we're going to talk about internet pornography, an important issue, a dangerous issue for our kids. And I think it's something important for us to discuss. And it's not something we want to stick our heads in the sand about, something we want to openly be able to talk about with our kids. And so we're going to get into that today. And Brian Hausman is going to provide all kinds of fantastic advice and insight. And so without any more delay, here's my interview, part two, with Brian Hausman.
Welcome to the Stuff for Parents podcast. From schooling to parenting and everything else in between, we talk all about the stuff that comes with being a parent. Here's your host, Mark LaPointe.
Briefly talk about this need for teens to protect their online reputation. I think, and let me sort of set this up a bit. For you know, you and I, we've talked about, you know, we have teenage kids, so we grew up in a time where, of course, there was no such thing as, you know, social networking and texting and all that. So to think about, you know, when we're on Facebook or any other social networking site, we're not doing a lot of things to put our reputation on the line. You know, if you tend to be a little bit more old school like I am, I use Facebook mainly to pass along information. I post blogs and podcasts and things like that. But I'm not really going out on a limb and showing pictures of my, you know, compromising pictures of myself, so on and so forth. So this, for some parents, they may not be thinking about, you know, online reputation, especially for their kids and their teens in particular. So talk about the need for teens to protect that.
Yeah, this is huge, Mark. Matter of fact, we just created a brand new a couple of months ago, a new presentation to go along with a book just for teens that's really targeted toward high schoolers, primarily juniors and seniors, on getting your social media college ready. You know, meaning getting your all your social media in a place that you are ready for a college recruiter, you know, to be able to look at your social media because they're going to ask for it. You know, matter of fact, 82% of all college recruiters say that they look at Facebook. Over half of them look at Twitter. Over half of them look at your YouTube. Wow. And this is huge. What that means is everything that you have said, that you have posted, that you have liked, every group that you're a part of, now is going to be scrutinized when it comes to college. And so, you know, you can say anything you want to on your college application. You know, and the whole point is to make yourself look as good as possible, you know, to that prospective college. But now they're going to go to your Facebook, your Twitter, your Instagram, see the photos that you've posted, the kind of lyrics that you've posted on there. That, you know, so let's say you got a picture of your kid has got a picture on there of them. They've worked hard to get the right grades. They've done all the extracurriculars that they need to. They've volunteered in their community. They've taken their college, you know, entrance exam. They've jumped through all the hoops they need to, but yet there's a picture of them at a keg party holding up a Heineken,
right?
You know, and now that college recruiter, everything else becomes skewed that they've done because of that one photograph. And 70% of colleges said that they consider prospective student does and says on Facebook to be a high priority, you know, meaning that they consider that a more relevant way of understanding who you are in everyday life than whatever grade you made on your entrance exam. And they're concerned about the character of your child when they come to that college because they know that this is going to affect the DNA of their school, and they don't want that to be rocked in any way.
Yeah, and you know, our daughter, she's in grade 11 now, so she's obviously getting ready to, for entrance into university. Mm-hmm. And we tell her all the time, and not necessarily with her online reputation, but you know that having read your book, it certainly has brought that front and center. But we tell her all the time, look, there's going to be tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of students who are applying to all sorts of colleges and universities. Mm-hmm. And in terms of grades, there's not going to be a whole lot to differentiate you from, right. from another high-achieving student. So what you do or what you don't do will differentiate you. And I think that's – you've mentioned something that's huge. Right? All it takes is for a recruiter, a university recruiter to look at your social media to see, for example, you getting plastered at a party – and that's it. That's all it takes. It has totally colored everything else in a negative way.
Absolutely.
And like I said, having read that in your book, I think you know that makes me think too. Well, you know, I keep up with what my daughter does in her social media, but now
Well, hey, Mark, here's a couple of things that you could do for you and your daughter, and for you parents out there listening, you could do this as well. So I just spoke at a National Honor Society group of juniors and seniors last week, and this was the two pieces of advice I gave them when it comes to their social media. I said, one, you should set up a separate blog that is just for you to basically advertise yourself. It's going to be a blog where you post some of your school reports. You post pictures of you volunteering at the animal shelter, you know, photos of you at the Special Olympics helping out, you know, all those things. So when a college recruiter says, hey, I'd love to go see your Facebook, you can say, well, hey, here's my blog. You're welcome to go see anything that you want to see. Because what that is you've leveraged your own influence because you've created this basically an online, you know, digital, I just lost the word, like resume
yeah.
of yourself online. And but the other thing to do is to give another adult that you trust, and it doesn't necessarily have to be your parents, but to give another adult that you trust, give them your username and password, and it could just be that you log in as the teenager to your Facebook or your Twitter or your Instagram. You log in and give it to somebody else for 30 minutes and say, I want you to look at everything on here, and you tell me if you see anything on here that you think is suspect. So that, you know, this person, they're not looking at it to scold you, to get you in trouble. They're looking at it to protect you, you know, for your best interest.
Excellent. Practical advice. And thank you for making that directly relevant to me and my daughter. I think that's I have to think about that. But I think an online blog would be an excellent way to, like you said, have this really positive resume. I'm going to really switch gears here because there is so much stuff that I'd love to talk about. But like I said from the beginning, I can't possibly get into it in a lot of detail. And you're being really gracious by spending all this time doing this.
Sure. But
I do want to talk about another very hot topic, which is cyberbullying.
Mm-hmm.
It gets a good deal of attention in your book. But, you know, different people have different ideas as to what bullying and more specifically what cyberbullying is. So can you define for our listeners exactly what it is?
Yeah, cyberbullying is defined as using technology in a way that it demeans, harasses, ridicules someone else because of their nationality, their sexual orientation, their religious beliefs, political beliefs, their gender, their body weight. You know, basically saying that I think that you are less valuable of a person than I am. And I'm going to use my Twitter account, my Kick, my Instagram, my Facebook, my cell phone, you know, to be able to tell you and tell the whole world about that.
Okay, so you know, when most of us think of bullying, I mean, it's kind of the tradition in the traditional sense, where
yes.
you know, the bully in the schoolyard. But that type of bully and the cyber bully, they're both harmful. But what's so different? Because there is you talk about this in your book.
Yes.
There is a difference between that traditional view of what a bully is and cyber bullying. And what is it?
Well, let's say when you and I were in school, and if we're in say sixth grade. And you come up to me on the playground or you come up to me in the cafeteria and you say, hey, you and me after school out by the swing set,
right.
you know, bring it on. And I'm looking at you and I'm going, okay, I know what my enemy looks like. You know, I know his voice, you know, I know his jacket, his backpack, and I am not going to the swing set.
Right.
But what happens with cyberbullying is almost half of it is completely anonymous. And so your kid gets an anonymous text message, you know, on their cell phone, or they get a post on their Twitter account or on their Ask FM account, and they have no idea where this is coming from. And so they go to school the next day, and let's say it's your seventh grade daughter. And because the biggest demographic group is middle school girls.
Right.
So they go to, she goes to school the next day, and she's gotten text messages the night before that says, "You fat, ugly hoe. And you should go back where you came from. And, you know, you're a joke if you think any of the boys here would ever like you. You should just go off and die someplace." So then she goes to school the next day. If she goes to school the next day, you know, parents, 160,000 children skip school every single day, not because they're sick, but because they're terrified of going to school because they've been a victim of cyberbullying. Wow. 160,000, you know? So again, let's say she goes to school the next day. Virtually every person she passes in the hallway, her first thought is, well, maybe it was him. Maybe it was her. Well, maybe she sent it. Did it come from him? Because they have no idea where the messages were coming from. So here it is, Mark, you've got a background in education. You know, can you imagine a kid trying to focus on mathematics where they're sitting in a classroom and the whole time they're looking, darting around, looking at everybody else thinking, did she send me the message? Did it come from him? Maybe she did it. You know, and they can't focus because psychologically they feel terrified.
Yeah, and, you know, having been a teacher, you know, when you have that traditional bully, and obviously teachers and administration, they want to discourage that behavior. So when you know that this is going on, you can try and do something about it, confront the child, talk with the parents. It seems to me that with cyberbullying, I mean, you're anonymous. You can terrorize someone and potentially there's no consequences to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So for parents who
I think this is one of those things that, you know, if a kid comes to – if your kid comes home and says, hey, mommy, I was out in the front yard and this boy pushed me down, that you're going to go, okay, I'm going to be mama bear and I'll go take care of this. And we're going to regulate out in the hall, out in the front yard, you know. But when it comes to cyberbullying – parents, we've seen the news stories on the news. We hear we read the articles on the internet. We talk about it in PTA groups. But yet, when it comes to everyday life, less than 10% of parents said that they consider cyberbullying something that really affects their child. But yet, over 58% of all children said they've been victims of cyberbullying. So again, that's a huge discrepancy in numbers when it comes to not seeing reality as a parent. And so, again, that's not to say that your kid is being victimized, but just that we've got to always have our radar up of how technology can be misused.
And that was going to be my next question. What advice do you have for parents who recognize that their child's being bullied online? I mean, you talked about that mama bear instinct, and I think you mentioned this in your book, but I think sometimes for parents, like you said, that person is faceless. You can't see them, but you want to go online and tear a strip off of them. I mean,
yes.
Do you advise that? What do you advise for parents?
You know, one, I'd say begin to look if you and your child, you know, think about what your normal relationship with your child is like so that when you begin to see things that are off, you know, that could be kind of red flags, so to speak. So let's say that your child, they begin to experience anger or they begin to feel embarrassed in public in situations that ordinarily they wouldn't be. Like say when other teenagers walk up to you, let's say you're at church and you and your child are standing there and other teenagers walk up and all of a sudden your child starts to feel like shy when ordinarily they wouldn't, or they feel scared, or you begin to you see that their appetite is changing, their weight is dropping, they sleep more, they seem more depressed, and you know, all those things that can be signs of many different things. But just when you see things like that as a parent, you should, you know, there should be an antenna that goes up that says, danger, danger, Will Robinson. You know, I need to look into something here, you know. And when your kids start saying, I really don't feel well, I don't know that I want to go to school today, you know, just things like that we should be aware. So how should we respond as a parent? You know, our instinct is to go, well, I'm going to go fix this right now. And so, you know, one of the things we tell if you're a dad that you may tell the kid is, well, you need to fight back. You know, if this kid sends you a message, you need to send him a message right back. And that is horrible advice, awful advice, because it's exactly what the bully wants. It's just feeding the bully, you know. And now there's going to be a written record of your child participating in the conversation. Mm-hmm. And that's not what you want, because let's say that the bully says something like, you know, you act so gay. You know, and which is a common thing with cyberbullying. And then your child responds back with, well, why would you say something like that to me? I like the way that I am. Well, you know, now what the bully's going to start spreading around, they're going to pass that screenshot around and say, he just admitted he's gay. I was like, well, that's not what the kid said at all. You know, the kid was basically trying to say, stop picking on me. And so my advice is, when you see it, don't respond to the bully, but take a screen grab if it's on your phone or your computer, you know, capture that image and save it, and then contact an authority, a legal authority, you know, meaning the police force, who can, the FBI, if it's sexually related, so that they can look into this on your child's behalf. Hmm. Because studies have shown the number one thing that stops a cyber bully is when a legal authority gets in their face and says, I dare you to do this again.
Right.
You know, if you do it again, it's going to be problems for you. And then that's when it stops.
Okay.
Okay, I'm sorry. That sounded really intense.
No, but
I apologize, parents, for sounding really intense. But it's just that we've just seen so many children,
you know,
that are being victimized and they don't know it. Last year, there's an app that's called Ask.fm.
Yeah.
It's one of the 10 most popular apps that teenagers use. It's a messaging app, and what you do is you post questions on there. So you can post pictures of yourself at the shopping mall with an outfit you're thinking of buying and saying, hey, what do you think about this outfit? Mm. Or you can post questions of, hey, what's my best quality, or what's my worst quality, or things like that. Well, there's been 3 suicides in the last 2 years related to Ask.fm. Because the way that it works is you can't set your profile to private, meaning that anything that you post on there, anybody else on the app or the website can respond to it. And so it's been rife with cyberbullying, because kids, they find out each other's profile, that each other are on there, and they'll go, okay, we're going to get her now.
Right.
You know, next time she posts something, look, we're going to pounce.
Brian, don't ever apologize for being passionate, you know, especially in a medium like this. I love to hear the passion come out in you know, the voices of the people that I interview. And I think for our listeners, I mean, they know that you are being very serious about this, and this is a serious topic, everything that we've been talking about. Finally, I want to talk about online pornography.
Yeah.
I'm going to read something in your book really quickly. And this is what I was referring to at the beginning. This is a graphic that you have in your book, Tech Savvy Parenting. So you talk about the 7 facts you didn't know about internet pornography. I'm going to read them really quick. So 12% of all websites are pornographic. 25% of all search engines requests are for porn. $3,075 is spent every second on porn. Utah is a state with the most subscribers to paid porn. 2.5 billion emails are sent each day that are related to pornography. Thanksgiving is the day of the year with the least amount of porn activity. Now, I need to, for our Canadian listeners, that I'm not sure if that applies to Canada, but this is for American Thanksgiving. And finally, Sunday is the most popular day of the week for viewing porn. So, some of this I was already aware of, but a lot of it is very eye-opening. Different parents have different reactions to the thought that their kids might be watching pornography. Some are horrified and sickened, and some might feel that it isn't a big deal. I remember from when I was a kid, a teenager, I should say, I made a friend at a new high school I was going to, and I remember going to his house to do some homework, and he had pornography up on the walls in his room, and I was shocked, and his mother laughed at it. She laughed at my reaction. And I just – that has always stuck in my mind, and I at that time thought every parent would be horrified by this, but not that parent. And now these days, obviously, pornography is a lot more accessible online. So what's your response to those parents who might feel like it's not that big of a deal?
Well, I haven't personally experienced that parent yet.
Okay.
You know, who comes up to me and says, this is just not that big a deal. What I encounter is, I would say the two biggest questions that I get asked from parents is, how do I deal with my kid being on so many different social medias or, you know, social networks? And the second one is, I just found porn on my son's cell phone or my daughter's laptop, and I have no idea what to do about this. And, you know, most parents, particularly moms, really are mortified by it. You know, they do see it for what it is, that it's objectifying women, that they don't understand that we're talking tens of thousands of the women that are involved in digital porn are there because they're part of the sex slave trade. And, you know, I mean, just consider that, you know, that the things that we would consider in our culture as being commonplace, this is no big deal. Hey, these women, it's their right to show their bodies and they're making money off of it. But yet, what if they're not? What if this thing that we, so many people derive pleasure from, is really the most insidious part of our culture because these people are being enslaved? And we know this is a reality. So when it comes to our kids, you know, I talk about in the book that the average child's first exposure to digital porn is now the age of 9. You know, that 90% of all 9 to 18-year-olds are going to view digital pornography. And what they're going to do is they're going to go to their child and they're going to go, you know, is this what you really think about women? You know, how dare you bring this into our house? I cannot believe you did this, right? I thought you were more mature than this. And, you know, those kind of responses, because we tend to respond many times as parents with a knee-jerk reaction to things. And I'm telling you, mom, dad, if that is how you respond, then it's the last conversation you will ever have with your child about pornography, because you've just brought shame into the equation. And again, me, I am a Christ follower. And so much of how everything that I do in life, I believe is a spiritual thing. And so for me, digital pornography, social media, texting, all this stuff really is an outcropping of my spiritual life as well, and my family's spiritual life. And so for me, I had to look at this in that through that lens. And I know that God never uses shame to make us more like himself. That shame is from our spiritual enemy. And so when we bring shame into the equation, shame, what it does is it makes our children go further into the darkness, that they're going to hide their actions even more. That what they learn is they won't learn what not to get caught doing. They don't learn how to be a better person or how to be more Christ-like. In the same way that I believe what God does is God brings conviction, you know, to our hearts and our minds so that we go, hey, wow, you know, I don't want this to be a part of my life. This is not the kind of person that I want to be, the kind of husband, the kind of friend, you know, that I want to be. And so, again, I take it back to parents to say, you know, if you don't want that to be a part of your child's life, which I'm guessing 99.9% of parents would say so, then you need to talk about this in a very mature and open way with your children and in an age-appropriate way. So my son was 9 the first time we had a conversation about digital pornography. I didn't call it pornography because he's 9. He doesn't know what that means. So instead, we just talked about that sometimes there may be a person without their clothes on that might pop up on our computer screen. And if that happens, I need you to come get me, because you can always trust me as your dad, that I will always take care of this for you, that you don't need to be embarrassed about this. And sure enough, within the first year it happened, you know, and he came and got me and we were able to deal with it. And then as he got older, of course, you know, his body's going to change, his mind changes, his curiosity changes. And so now it's no longer an issue of, let me call dad and have him take care of it. Now it's a curiosity issue of, well, I hear so many people talking about sex, and so I want to understand this myself. And so we were able to have a conversation about, you know, how your body changes and your mind changes, and you're going to want answers. And you can always come to me first for those answers. And I will never avoid any question that you ask me. You know, so again, part of that is just as a parent, letting your kid know that you're the first line of defense. You will always be their encyclopedia. You'll be their Ask Jeeves, you know, that you they can come to you with anything that you want to answer. And so when the day finally came that that my son was exposed to it on his own accord, that I went, when I knew it happened, that I went to him and we had an honest conversation, and I told him these exact words, is I said, I will never shame you. And you and me, we are a band of brothers, and I will always have your back, and I will always be in the trench with you. I will never leave you. And you and me, you make yourself accountable to me. And as your father, I'll make myself accountable to you. And so I'm giving you permission that you can come and look at my cell phone anytime you want to. You can come look at my laptop anytime you want to, because I'm going to be doing the same thing with you. And so what it created is just this almost a level playing field where he didn't feel like I was coming to him as an authority figure, but he felt like I was coming to him as a fellow man that loves him and has his best interest at heart.
Well, Brian, that was, you know, an excellent, I don't want to even call it advice. I think it's just, it's wisdom for parents, really. You know, because we talk about prevention and we can talk about, there's a lot of practical things and we're not, you know, you talk about that in your book. But I think what's really important here, the thing to emphasize is that, first of all, not to be reactive as a parent, be proactive, but
absolutely,
but to communicate the things that you've just communicated. I think that that's huge. That really sets the stage for helping your child to be successful, to, you know, to either totally, you know, circumvent an addiction to pornography, or if that's becoming an issue, to help them out of that addiction. I know there's so much more we could talk about with regard to that, but like I said, we just don't have the time to get into all those details. So I'm going to end it there. But did you have any final thoughts that you wanted to share with our listeners on any of this?
Yeah, I would just say, you know, as a parent, I know it feels overwhelming and just about on a daily basis when it comes to technology in our lives and how much it's a part of our kids' lives. You know, our kids, the average child is wired 11 and a half hours a day. You know, they're connected to some kind of a media. And, you know, the average parent has 6.5 minute conversation a day with their kids. And we're just thinking, man, there's no way I can compete with that. And honestly, I don't know that we're supposed to. I think that, you know, there's no way I'm going to get 11 and a half hours a day, you know, as a parent to compete with that. But what I can do is make sure that every day I'm in my child's ear, reassuring them that they can always come to me. They can always trust me. And, you know, when you do have those times, because you're going to have them, where you have to confront your child about something, whether it's digital pornography or an inappropriate text message or a website they went to, or they had their cell phone in bed or whatever it is, you know, I encourage you to make sure that conversation is couched in love and not in rebuke. You know, and so I start my conversations with my children by first asking two questions of them. I'll ask them the question, do you really believe that I love you? And then the second question is, do you really believe that I have your best interest at heart? Because if they say no to either one of those things, then we're not going to have the original conversation. We need to have a whole different other conversation, you know, because if they don't believe that I have their best interest in heart, then I have not earned the right to correct them about some digital issue. You know, I need to deal with their heart first, you know, and once I've gained their heart, I've gained their trust, then we can begin to shape their own behavior issues. So that's about it. Mark, thank you so much for having me on with you today. Parents, thank you so much for listening as well.
And Brian, where can they get a copy of the book? I know you mentioned it earlier, and a website that you would recommend that they access. I know you had also mentioned that, but can you tell us again?
Yeah, you can go to Amazon. There it would be Amazon.com or Amazon. Do you guys use Amazon.ca?
Yeah, both.
Yeah. And or you can go to Barnes & Noble, to Borders. They both have it as well. Or you can go to d6family.com, and that's my publisher, and they have it as well. And there's also digital versions available, so you can read it on your iPad, your Kindles, your Nooks, those kind of things.
And I'll just for our listeners, as always, in the show notes, I'll have links to the relevant website and a link to Amazon if people just want to quickly access it that way. And finally, anyone who has any questions or comments, they can always follow me on Twitter, marklapointedu, or go to our website, stuffforparents.com, and you can leave comments there. Or you can email a comment. And if you have a question for Brian, and of course I'm sure they can
access it
through the website. But some people like to ask me the question, which I will pass on to you. If anyone is inclined to do that, they can email here, comments@stuffforparents.com. Brian, this has been excellent. Thank you very much for your time. And
absolutely.
Maybe we'll invite you back to cover some other things.
Thank you. God bless you guys.
Okay. Bye for now.